This is Radio IMCLA and the Community Voices Project, and I'm Casey Calloway. Today, we're going to turn inward and do a little navel gazing, some might say, but I think put the information out there about who Indie Media is, where we came from, what we're about, and where we're headed. We have some really interesting Indie Media guests today. Sitting here with me is Jay Sand from Indie Media Philadelphia. We have right now on the line Sherry Herndon from Indie Seattle. And then later in the 2 hours, we'll be talking to Luce from Indie Media Chiapas, Shane from Indie Media Calgary, and Chris Burnett, who works with Global Tech. So, that said, we're going to get started. Which of you guys wants to just sort of take on a very brief history of Indie Media, where we came from?
I can start with a little bit of a background. This is Jay from Philadelphia. And the Independent Media Centers and the Indie Media Project began as a result of years and years of organizing by many, many dedicated independent media makers around the world, people who were struggling to try to find a place in the society for voices of people who are underrepresented in the mainstream corporate-owned media for issues that rarely get representation, and when they do, rarely get good representation. People were trying to find a way to make space, make really available, free, and comfortable space for the discussion of issues that rarely get discussed. And so people were doing that all over the world for a long time. The advent of a lot of do-it-yourself technology had made that easier. The video camera making it easier for people to record their own and create their own video news stories, with more accessible radio equipment enabling people to do that in the radio, with even photocopiers enabling people to present their own information to each other pretty readily in print. And the internet enabled people to do that, to broadcast to the world for a very low production cost online. And so the coming together of this push to create independent media and the technologies enabled these people to create at least the vision of having an international push towards the creation of independent media. Several different projects developed that were testing the waters, were trying to use some of these technologies to pull together international attention on some of these issues. And in the end of 1999, during the protests against the World Trade Organization's meetings in Seattle, a group of very dedicated independent media makers from all different media came together and created what they called an independent media center. It was a place that provided the possibility for this type of information to come out, alternative information to what was being broadcast on the mainstream. And people, when they saw that something interesting was happening in Seattle, something important was happening in Seattle, and they sensed that they weren't getting the whole story on their CNN or their television news or in the newspaper, were able to readily access the Independent Media Center's website and found out, in fact, what was happening on the street, being told to them by people on the street and not filtered through a reporter who is filtered through a network, which is filtered through a company. And since then, the idea of this project has spread around the world, and now there are about 70 independent media center groups around the world, and most places around the world have some sort of independent media center in their country, in their city, or nearby. And these are all created by people who really desperately want to get the word out about their issues that are rarely represented in their corporate or government media, also to enable people, real people, to speak and not to have to rely on professional journalists with particular agendas to tell their stories.
Sherry, being one of those early first members of Indie Media, one of those founding people, anything to add to that?
Well, Jay did a fabulous job. I just want to maybe just a few small points. I think that the point of that we're building on something that had come before for a long, long time, I think that history is really really a powerful history, and one that it's important for us not to forget. I just want to read from an excerpt from something that was written for the 1996 Encuentro in Chiapas, and I believe this is Subcomandante Marcos. "Let's make a network of communication among all our struggles and resistances, an intercontinental network of alternative communication against neoliberalism and for humanity. This intercontinental network of alternative communication will weave the channels so that words may travel all the roads that resist. It will be the medium by which distinct resistances communicate with one another. This intercontinental network of alternative communication is not an organizing structure, nor has a central head or decision maker, nor does it have a central command or hierarchies. We are the network. All of us speak and listen." And I think that that kind of underlies a lot of what we're seeing coming out of new organizational structures, and in response to the kind of dominant hierarchical society and very oppressive society that we're living in. And the Independent Media Center in Seattle, it was really a space for facilitating media from independent alternative folks. Those, like as Jay was mentioning, there was just like a lot of different threads were being woven together, and some of those are obviously the video activist community and the micro radio pirates and the computer hacker code writers and the zine makers and the photographers, and all these people came together. And we expected in Seattle, we had no idea exactly how many people would come. We printed off 100 little forms. We thought that was a lot. We ended up by the end of the day, when we kind of opened registration a couple days before things started, or 2 days before, it was 450 people signed up. So there was an overwhelming desire to connect and to collaborate. And the space was a chaotic, crazy space, that there was actually this beautiful harmony, because people were truly collaborating and working together and learning from each other. So it was a really powerful space. And something that I think is important, too, for some of that history, and that what is it that we're trying to create? I mean, this is indie media represents sort of the communication voice of one voice and one model of this new paradigm, this movement of movements and network of networks. And something that someone wrote, and I don't know exactly when, but sort of leading up to this, from Red Pepper, and it was, this is a short quote, "We need a nimble, plural, international guerrilla strategy to break the corporate grip on democracy." And I love that, because it's sort of like this, I think that was sort of what's been, indie media kind of represents the one experiment and one model that is definitely a strategy, and international and plural and flexible, and trying to break the corporate domination of media. So
it's interesting, Sherry, because and guerrilla, which was part of that quote. This weekend in Los Angeles, the USC Annenberg conference for online journalism is happening, and they very specifically did not want a representative from indie media. John Kay is down there anyway. And we may actually get him on the phone here in a little while and find out what he's doing there. But the notion that there was such a need for the kind of grassroots guerrilla type journalism, I think, speaks to the success so far. Not that there aren't issues that have to be dealt with, but the success so far and the growth of indie media. Mm-hmm. Also, I had never heard that from the Chiapas Encuentro.
Oh.
That sort of describes indie media. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, that's a good piece of history to know that that's sort of those one piece of the roots.
Right. Both of you two work with the global group New IMCs, which has been very busy over the last year. Can I get either or both of you to talk a little bit about your experiences of the people who want to be IMCs, what, you know, where they're popping up, where, what excites you about this area?
Sure. It has been a huge challenge to work with that part of the network. And sometimes it's exhilarating because really, literally every week, if not almost every day, there's a new group somewhere in the world that writes to us wanting to form an independent media center in their place. And the way that indie media has developed, we don't go out and find people to become IMCs. There's not, though we're very proud of things that have happened in certain respects, and we tell people in all these places about the successes and the failures of what we've done. We don't go to places to with the idea of spreading the model around the world as much as people come to us. Just email randomly people who've never met anyone in the Indie Media Network but have seen the independent media sites and have been following the websites, and they say, we want to do this in our area. And sometimes they say, we have been having meetings for 3 months in Andorra or wherever places around the world, in Jakarta or in Zimbabwe or anywhere where they've been organizing for a little while this independent media project, and they've understood the power of what indie media represents, and they want to be part of it. It's very frustrating because what we're trying to do is build a network of autonomous local groups that each has its own character and each has its own abilities and things that it wants to do and ways that it can share its own abilities with the network. And it has become, it's very difficult to impart the importance of participating in this global network as a two-way communications channel where they're not just getting to put a logo of indie media on their site, but in fact, by joining this network, are participating in something. And we're trying to come to a way to both impart that to groups when they want to participate in the network from the beginning, to let them know the importance of what they're getting into, and also to develop ways for the groups within the network to actually communicate and work together so that these groups that are joining will have a way to advance their participation and share actively and practically with other network groups. It's time consuming, it's difficult, and it's really wonderful to meet all these really exciting people around the world who are so interested in this project that we've been working on.
It might be interesting at this point to discuss what makes the independent media centers a network. So I come to you from, I don't know, pick a place, India, and which I know is a relatively new IMC. Okay, I want to be a new IMC. What do you tell them? Sherry?
Oh, Jay, continue. I'll add in at the end here.
Okay, well, we're really in the process of developing the way that we communicate with new groups. I mean, originally we had no idea that this would happen, that people from everywhere around the world would want to be part of this. It was just not something that was part of any practical plan. It was something that, of course, you envision at the beginning, that everyone around the world would be interested in something that you do just because you're a human being and have that type of arrogance. But it never actually happens. And this was a real shock that people are still, even 2 years later, coming and wanting to participate. And not only wanting to participate, but wanting to participate in really productive ways that they become part of the advancement of this thing. So we've been developing a plan as we've been going along. Originally, there was no real way to, there was no process for accepting groups into the network, and that created a lot of chaos, a lot of problems, because there wasn't any sort of mechanism for working with people to explain what we'd done, explain the history, explain what we try to do, and explain the specific role that indie media plays, because there are lots of places within the independent media for people to go, and we're not the only, by any stretch, the only place people can go, and there are lots of avenues for independent media projects. So last May or so, I think, we developed this new IMC process, which has gone one step come up with some principles of unity, some things that a group really should do before they join the network. Things that are fairly basic organizing things, have meetings that are open to people, have a mission statement and an editorial policy, work on their website, have a lot of people involved that can sustain their group. And I think we've done a better job of bringing people into the network. What we found now in the last few weeks have been quite difficult, because we've been trying to explain the network to people who don't seem to really appreciate the work that's gone into it already, or maybe don't want to appreciate it, or haven't yet found a practical reason to appreciate it. What we're finding is that we it seems as if we're ready to go to the next step of this new IMC process. Really, instead of just getting people to think about things and organize a bit, to really work with groups to develop them as functionally sustainable independent media, community independent media groups, before they join the network. And we seem to have come to a point at which that's absolutely necessary. So that's where we are right now in that.
And I'd like to add, I think that it's really, I think part of the challenge that we face is that we're reclaiming language, we're reclaiming organizational design, we're designing as we go, there isn't really an adequate blueprint, etc., for this. And part of, when people think, oh, we're decentralized, that's great, we're all these IMCs and we're a decentralized network, I think sometimes the emphasis, it's like we have to understand more deeply what these words actually mean. And I think the emphasis has been in people's minds, it's like we want an IMC in our community. So they are an autonomous local IMC. And we place the emphasis on the local. And that's like very clear, and there's no question about that in anyone's mind. But it is then the relationship of those locals to the whole that makes it the network. And I think it's that, it's really understanding, and I think Chris B. can talk a little bit more about this, and I surely assume that you will, in terms of what it means to be a network. I think a lot of times originally, as Jay was mentioning, the history is we didn't have a process, and the burden was falling on the tech, IMC tech crew, because people just sort of thought it's a digital network, you know, give us a server, give us a website, link us up. And what we've realized is for us to claim and to discover and to experiment with the kind of power of a decentralized communications network that's international, we have this social fabric, we have this relationship, we're a social network as well as a digital network. And I think that that's what we're in the process of trying to communicate more effectively to people, as well as that it's a responsibility as well to participate. That, you know, just like we talked about democracy, you know, it's direct democracy. You're a local IMC, you have a voice in this network. It's like, well, how does that manifest itself? And so I think that that's a really interesting place. And as Jay was talking about, in terms of, you know, my gosh, all these people they're just want an IMC. I think that what we're going to see in terms of a new evolution and a next stage in our development is also seeing that there are concentric circles of these networks, just like the network of networks metaphor from the Chiapas Encuentro, and that many people have used in terms of movements. There's the IMC network, and those are people that are like, those are IMCs that are like, yeah, we want to be a part of this network for these reasons, and we love these principles of unity, or we just want to be a part of this. But then there must be space for affiliates of IMC, people who are doing their own thing and are not IMC. You know, we don't want to be a franchise. We don't want to take away from different projects, but they want to have some kind of relationship to this network. And I think that that's going to be a very creative place for us to explore in terms of affiliates of the IMC. And even, I think we need to do a much better job with the allies of the IMC network in terms of giving support from our own structures, socially and digitally, to those people and organizations and projects that have, you know, were here before we were, or have started up with a different interest, or maybe they're more arts-oriented, or they do something completely different in their community, or whatever, but they want to still participate in somehow. So those, I think developing those relationships will be a really important next step.
Two things to add to what Sherry was saying, and it's absolutely, I agree that we we're trying to find the balance between all of these different spaces that have created themselves throughout the world for independent voices, and so we're learning as we go along, and it's and exactly as Sherry said, there's no precedent necessarily for this. This type of international, decentralized, functioning communications network that is an organization that works together in many ways, that we're learning through trial and error, and there are a lot of people involved that are very passionate about this work, not just because it's an independent media project, but because of the greater goals of creating a place for the voice of actual people and the effect that has on the world. And so it's very passionate, and we have ourselves a lot of work ahead of us and a lot of things that we're learning to do. One of the things that we've been quite successful at, and has been one of the most powerful parts of this network, is the real life coming together of people at many different places around the world for many different reasons, who are part of independent media, whether it's just regional gatherings of different local IMCs, whether it's regional meaning of cities here in the United States and Canada, where most of the IMCs are based in cities, or countries, most in Europe and other places around the world, each country will have its own IMC group, and they'll come together in regional meetings. But oftentimes it's working events when we're coming together to provide coverage of a conference or a protest or something that...
We're going to continue this discussion. We've actually just been joined by Shane in Calgary. Hi, Shane.
Hello.
Thanks for stopping in. Just to let you know what we're talking about, Sherry and Jay have both been discussing their involvement with the new IMC working group and what it means to be a part of a network. Anything from your personal point of view from working in Calgary that you want to talk about with regard to that, to being part of the network, or any of your own involvement with the network?
Well, I guess right now a lot of the energy in Alberta is going to building a regional network here between British Columbia and Alberta, and really trying to get rural communities involved in the urban centers. So that's the sort of level of networking and the new IMC process that we're working most with, rather than going the other direction up into the global or intercontinental level.
And how much work are you guys doing with, even on a national level? Are you remaining predominantly within Alberta, or are you spreading out in terms of your networking over the whole of Canada?
Well, we just recently had a Pacific Northwest convergence where we met with a bunch of people from Western Canada. Right now we're trying to, well, in Alberta we've just organized ourselves as an official nonprofit society in Alberta, and we're hoping to use the Societies Act and the Cooperatives Act to network across the country. But it's obviously going to take some time, and a lot of energy is going into local organizational development, so we can share that knowledge with other IMCs across the country, and if they're interested, hopefully work networking through that type of process.
Sherry, based on some of the things that you were saying earlier with regard to local IMCs, do you want to address anything that Shane has, either you or Jay, that Shane just brought up?
Just one really quick thing that we could talk a lot more about, but is the idea of best practices that each local IMC, as Shane is talking about, that they're working on, you know, regionalizing and outreach to rural communities and developing their local IMC as a under Canadian law as a cooperative or a what is it called?
A nonprofit society.
And I think that there's so much that this gets back to sort of the other benefits of being in a network, right? There are these benefits, and one of them is that each local IMC is doing this phenomenal work and struggling to try to find answers and solutions to their own, you know, political and social situations in their regions. They're coming up with amazing things, and the rest of the network isn't always hearing about them. So one of the things that I think would be really great is to develop a sort of space, page, website or something that would be best practices so that, you know, Alberta could put up something about this and more people in the network would go, oh, that's so great that they're doing that kind of work. Or we could learn from this piece of it and integrate it in this way. And I know there's so many examples of this, I can't really get into them, but... So that's what comes to mind in terms of that, and I think that, you know, Shane and I have talked a lot about this over the past 2 years, the network and where does the basis of organizing and emphasis come from? Is it at the starting, you know, networking actually within your own community in your city and developing networks there and helping facilitate media, and then in your region, and then on the continent, and then internationally. And I think that hopefully Shane, that this model that he's involved with and people in Canada, and I think that there's other places, Latin America network is beginning to do this more regional network where they are coordinating with each other, and there's challenges that are raised in that model as well. And I think that what Jay and I have been initially talking about a few minutes ago in terms of the network as a whole, I think working from both ends can be really productive as long as, and ideally, if there's the communication is ongoing so that there's just some space for us to all be learning from each other during the process.
You know, Jay and I were talking yesterday, and I understand this conversation's been going on, I think Jay said, on one of the global lists, about a notion of quarterly report backs or monthly report backs or whatever, because I think sometimes we get so involved in our locals that and whatever global group we're working on, but we know there's this network out there, but I found, even in preparing for this morning, I was wondering, wow, you know, what are some of the major accomplishments of the network? What do people feel like they're doing really well? Where do they feel like they could use help from other members of the network? You know, how are, in the same way, the kind of the best ideas page that you're talking about, also just a check-in, just a page that I could go to and see what you guys are up to in Seattle, or see what you're up to in Alberta or Philly or wherever.
Yeah, I think that's where we're headed, and it's definitely an idea that has been around for a while, and we've been working towards that type of solid communications, and I really think that's where we're going, and that's the kind of thing that will happen within the next few months, making it a lot easier for us to feel like a network and really feel like we're connected to each other. There are so many different elements of this this organizing, and what we find often is that while we're talking about doing things that are good internationally for indie media and internationally to help everything be stronger network-wise or regionally. We are also struggling every day in our own communities to spend all of our time working on local issues, and we find ourselves without enough time to do all this wonderful stuff that we want to do. In addition, all of us are volunteers, and that's, I think that's something quite important to note, is that of the hundreds if not more people who are involved in these IMCs around the world on a daily basis and working to make this happen, it's a volunteer network, and that is fascinating and encouraging and exciting, and also very frustrating, because we're working against the realities of the world that make us need to work full-time jobs to make money to support our organizing habits. And so a lot of things that were we a staff of 300 full-time employees would be quite within our reach are things that have been taking a lot more time and have been things that we've had to develop over a period rather than be able to focus on. And I think that's just part of the nature of it, and that's part of what makes it wonderful and part of what makes it a little bit difficult.
As well, I mean, I think this is probably an obvious, but we have language issues around the network. And when we're 70 collectives around the world represent, do we have any idea how many languages that represents?
None. no idea. I don't know. In various IMCs themselves, sometimes there are several languages, and they have within different groups communication problems because of language. And if you extrapolate to the rest of the world, we have some difficulties with that. We're learning, though. We're trying to work through that type of issue and trying to communicate in many more multilingual ways, and that's a huge challenge. It's a huge challenge, and also very exciting, but a huge, huge challenge.
Oh, go ahead, Sherry.
No, I wasn't.
Oh, okay. While we have Shane on the phone, Shane, tell us a little bit about, we're just going to switch gears a bit, about what's going on in, so you guys call yourselves IMC Alberta or Calgary or...
It began as a Calgary-based collective 2 years ago when the catalyst for the collective coming together was the World Petroleum Congress that was held in June of 2000. The collective didn't really have a long-term vision. It was really the World Petroleum Congress was the catalyst, and then a lot of the energy left the community. And we maintained a website, maintained communication virtually through email, but just in the spring, the people started getting back together, talking about revitalizing the website and the collective locally, and building a local space for media development. And we recognize that we are in Alberta with a big activist community in Edmonton, that we wanted to tap into a lot of the journalists and progressive people up there. So we decided that for long-term sustainability, it would be smarter for us to organize as an Alberta collective, and we have regional collectives in both Edmonton and Calgary, and different people spread throughout the province that are participating electronically. And right now we're using sort of the G8 that's coming to the Kananaskis in June, right, as a catalyst once again to bring new people into the process, to teach people and to do outreach and show them the what indie media can do for them, what building our own communication infrastructure and not being dependent on the corporate infrastructure, how much that can do to build activism in the province.
Terrific. What, beyond June, I mean, obviously, or in conjunction with June, tell us about just sort of specific work where you're doing there. Do you find that most of your efforts, since you're dispersed over a wide range of territory, do you find that most of your efforts are web-based? Do you do print work? Do you do, I mean, what direction do you guys head in for the most part in doing your day-to-day work?
Well, over the last 6 months in our sort of revitalization of the organization and really looking critically at our organizational structure, we recognized that one of the biggest priorities we had was simply distribution. There isn't a distribution network. There aren't radical and alternative bookstores in Alberta for activists to get their hands on media, and we really wanted to build a peer-to-peer-based distribution network. So that's where 100% of our energy has gone. We recognize that with a distribution network in place, production and facilitation of media will fall right naturally along behind that. It seemed rhetorical for us to work on producing media without the network to distribute it to people, and that's where our focus became looking at the organizing as a society and being able to sell memberships, have a board of directors, have an inclusive process so that there was a long-term viability of the project, so it didn't come together around the G8 in June and then fall apart again. Instead, we would have a vision for how we would build the distribution network locally in Alberta, interconnected with the other Canadian and international IMCs, in order to sustain the project once the G8 leaves Kananaskis. And so, sort of on top of that, we're recognizing that there's going to be a huge influx of people, one of these event-based phenomena, and we're trying to be really proactive in a lot of the resources that we go into acquiring. We're looking at what the legacy of those resources would be. We only need so much for the activist community here locally, and we recognize there's a huge inequality of resources internationally. I did some work in Argentina last year with the Argentine IMC, and we're looking to sister with one or more independent media centers and get a lot of the resources that come to Calgary for the G8 moving out of Calgary after and to a community that really needs them.
Wow, that's a really great use of the network. You know, the recognition that you only need so much, and that at that point it becomes necessary to share your wealth, that's terrific. Either of you guys want to speak to other situations like that? In fact, I think all three of you have worked with IMC Argentina over the last year, right?
In different ways, I think, yeah. And there are a lot of IMCs that are developing in places that because of their economic disparities, that they don't have the capacity for people to access the news through the web. I've been working a bit with the group in Nigeria, where there are hundreds of millions of people there, and the percentage of those who communicate online is so infinitesimally small. It's not a group that will receive its connection with the community in Nigeria through its website. And so part of what they're working on, and a substantial part of what they're working on, is taking their community media and bringing it out, exactly as Shane was saying, into the world, into the real world, where there are real life distribution points and where they have a way of making it a truly grassroots project. It's very difficult when you don't have enough money to buy a computer to even when you don't have enough money to do photocopies, to do international to do distribution of international news throughout a huge country. So there are lots of challenges that people are facing as to how they want to configure their local independent media project to be most effective. And I think that one of the ways that being in the network is essential to the success of the whole project is that we share things with each other, and some of the IMCs that are able to raise money have been able to share money and equipment with other IMCs that don't have that. And in exchange, these other IMCs are providing really wonderful connections with issues and activism and people that are in their area that otherwise there wouldn't be this communication. And so there's a move towards developing this two-way network in a way that we all are sharing from each other. And when Calgary sisters or partners with another IMC, what they'll be getting in response from this group will be a really wonderful flow of communication from this place that will come into Alberta that will I think, more than make up for the for whatever computer equipment that Shane will be able to send over to whatever country or whatever IMC, the Alberta IMC, decides to make their partner.
Just sort of building on that, one of the, I think, unique things that we're looking at here is that we recognize this sort of is a double-edged sword, because we can put a lot of work into getting resources together to provide for the community that converges on Alberta for the G8, but then there's the inherent cost of getting that those resources out. And I did some work with Argentine IMC, and we were trying to find a way to get hardware from Canada or the United States down into Argentina, and it was prohibitive by just the cost of transferring that and the taxes on the hardware coming into the country. So one thing that we've been looking at here is that there's massive communities of people in Alberta that aren't connected. There's rural communities that don't have fiber coming out into their community. And one of the challenges we have with the G8 is the G8 is meeting out in Kananaskis, which is in the foothills. And there's going to be a large convergence. There's a call for a solidarity village of international people coming, and they're going to be converging on what's looking like it's going to be native territory. And we recognize that on the reserves, there's not the infrastructure for distribution and networking because they haven't received government-sponsored fiber optic cables like the urban communities have. So one thing we're looking at is, first of all, building a wireless network so that we can get information from Kananaskis to Calgary and out to the rest of the world over the internet, but also over the long term, leaving that wireless infrastructure on the reserve so that the people there can benefit from us coming and build that network between the urban activists and the First Nations activists on the reserves.
We are back on here with Jay, Sherry, Shane, and we have since been joined in the flesh by John Kawakami from the LAIMC. And we're going to turn for a moment and let John tell us, although he says there wasn't much to report, but hopefully this will spark a discussion. As we said earlier, the USC Annenberg School of Journalism Conference for Online Journalism has been going on this weekend. And in terms of online journalism, we thought indie media was a bold exclusion from my point of view. And John went down there, and what'd you encounter, John?
Everybody was sitting in this one room talking. I'm listening to this guy talk about I'm not sure what. It seems to be a business conference. It's not really a journalism conference, although that's what they call it. Just from looking at the program had topics like the economics of online publishing, content that works, getting trained for convergence, and promising platforms, which like you add it up and it's basically all about how much it costs to publish something and how to make money off, you know, the margins. So
it's interesting. I mean, what it kind of sounds like to me is also it's about corporate journalism.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's about the business of journalism more than what, you know, what the purpose of journalism is.
It's another sign of trying to use the internet to make a profit and to do it through making a profit off of news.
Yeah.
There's a good, I can't find this link to it, but there was some months ago, maybe like 9 months ago, the NPR actually did a story about sort of the demise of online media organizations that have been in the traditional media trying to make a switch to online journalism, and how there was like a really abysmal failure, like they could not do it right, and that there were five examples of successful online news organizations, and the fifth one on the list was actually Indie Media, and they had AOL and Yahoo and I think Alternet and one other that I can never remember.
I think it's the /dot.
Maybe you're right, yes.
Okay, so, I mean, they're starting to get in the right direction. I mean, when I think of online journalism, I think of something that's completely not like traditional journalism. And I think of the thousands of people who have weblogs and, you know, hundreds of people involved in the journalistic aspects of IMC and even other organizations that are like IMC. It's not really, I don't think of business because right now it's not profitable. I don't know what kind of business that is, but it's a big money losing business right now.
I think it's an interesting thing to look at, and I would love to be in the room to hear these people talk about it, because as I understand it, the way that that corporate media makes a large amount of their money is through restricting the distribution of the media that's produced and adding value or whatever to the piece of media and distributing it for a return. And I recently listened to a professor at Columbia University named Eben Moglen, who has a presentation he calls the Dot Communist Manifesto, and he talks about how with the internet the cost of distribution becomes so marginal that it's hard to get people to recognize the value and pay for something when they all understand that replicating electronic bits in order to get my piece of that information costs the corporation or entity whatever next to nothing to give me. So what is the incentive for me to pay a premium to get that information?
Anyone? True. Yeah.
There's also this aspect of people becoming their own journalists, or at least trying to. And I would say that the majority of people who start these things called weblogs, I don't know if everybody knows what those are.
You might want to explain that, actually.
Well, a weblog is just a web page. It's a web page that has a piece of software behind it that allows a user to very easily edit articles and have them placed on the page in chronological order. And you can there are a bunch of companies that have free weblogs that you can just set up. And my guess is there's probably at least 100,000 of them out there. And most of them fail. So I think the standard that people are going to start to apply when they think of the value of news isn't so much what it costs to distribute the news, but what it costs to write it and what it costs to create it, because they'll have the experience of having created news.
John, if on these weblogs, if these are just small enterprises, right? Just people, individuals putting their own version of,
mm-hmm.
What would make them a failure? Are they trying to make a financial go of it?
No. I mean, for the most part, nobody expects to make any money. The main things are a lack of audience. You'll have, you have 100,000 weblogs and 100,000 readers. So, the ratio between the number of readers and the number of writers is really different from traditional media. And the other thing is just the effort it takes to maintain one of these things. Considering how much work it takes to do 1 week of indie media, imagine trying to produce the same amount of output by yourself. It's just a daunting task. So
this speaks actually somewhat to something that we were talking about a little earlier when Sherry was talking about really looking at our allies and our people who might want to be affiliated with indie media but might not necessarily want to be indie media. And does anyone want to add further on that idea?
Well, sure. I think that we have ourselves, that we had definitely, there's a niche that indie media fills, and because of the excitement surrounding a lot of the work that's going on in this particular niche, it seems as if what we don't want is for the existence of a fairly successful idea to suck the energy out of any other successful ideas, or to disable people from inventing something that's completely new and better. And I think it's sometimes in human beings to look at something that's working and want to join it rather than perhaps creating their own thing. But what we're trying to do more now, we're trying to realize that indie media plays a role in a much larger movement of independent media makers, and independent media makers play a role in a much larger movement for social justice and for free, for open information and for honest information, and that we're trying our best to solidify that what we do well, so and not necessarily to draw boundaries around it because there are so many possibilities, but to to better define what role we play, so that people will, when they want to play a somewhat different role, will have the energy and inspiration to go and invent something new and different. There's a lot of leeway within indie media, and just like we were talking about, each of the independent media centers doing something different and coming up with their own things, the invention, the level of invention that goes on in all aspects of indie media is really astounding, especially in the technical area where the code for some of these advances in distribution of information is being written literally as we speak. We're trying to make something new and exciting happen, and in doing that, we want to facilitate creativity in all aspects, and not become anything that's all encompassing. I guess not that we want to retreat into a corner, but we want to play a role in facilitating more and more and more of this in whatever way is possible.
Sherry, I know that you've talked a lot over the time that I've known you about reaching out to others, to, like we said, those who might want to be allies but not necessarily be a part of indie media. Just toss out some ideas of what you've been thinking in terms of how that might work on a practical level.
Yeah, I think that it's not something that just one person can do. Myself, just with the idea and trying, I know that there's been, Jay and I have talked about this, others, and I'm sure Shane and I have probably talked about this, many of us have talked about it, but I think that there's a lot of different mechanisms and a lot of different ideas for how we could do more effective outreach and coalition building and ally building and actually repairing some relationships with allies as well. And I think this comes to something that I wanted to say sort of earlier, but that is that a kind of a missing piece, I think, in indie media sometimes is more of a collective, and it can be collective on all the different levels, micro to macro, of thinking more strategically, asking ourselves questions that we do it together, not just one person saying, how do we better expand our allies? You know, there's an incredible creativity, as Jay was saying, that's out there that's phenomenal, and wow, I think we should be documenting it. But I think what I've seen in the free software movement and is really about collective intelligence. It's when people get together and start to collaborate. And I think that if we took that model from the digital network and applied it more to the social network on all levels, we would come up with some of these sort of tactics and sort of approaches and thinking strategically about just what Jay was saying and what Shane was talking about and what John was talking about. There's a lot of issues that we're raising here, and we need some collective reflection about them. I mean, I think we probably would be able to solve some, we could probably come up with ideas for like IMC affiliates and IMC allies and using the website and using links for giving recognition to projects and things like that. I think that radio.indiemedia does an excellent job, primarily because Amishon sort of oversees that site, and he has a really good understanding of the role that Radio for All has had in the radio pirate micro radio community for a long time, and he really gives space there for Radio for All, and I always love that when he will give recognition or like point people to Radio for All before saying come to radio.indiemedia. I think that's just one example of how to build a network more like that. And I have to go soon. I wanted to just mention something that goes back to another, I'm going to jump here for a moment,
fine,
associational,
yeah.
In my thinking, something that was talked about earlier with Shane's example, and I think it also ties in with the sharing of resources and the benefits of being in a network, and something that was written in the draft charter that maybe you guys will talk about later, under Chapter 3 of the network. The Independent Media Center Network recognizes the value in cooperation and sharing of resources in order to enhance those who are most in need within the network. And I think that we are coming up with some ideas for that I would call sort of alternative economic models, which, as being an anti-capitalist orientation, I mean, I think we could say that in certain ways, or defining, if we did want to define that term, capitalism hasn't worked. Well, so what kind of gift economy or barter economy or alternative economic models would work? And one of them is really seeing redistribution of the wealth and what that might look like. And I think that there's been some proposals out there, and I think John Kay will be able to talk a little bit more about this, some of the work that IMCLA, you guys have been talking about. But, you know, Portland came up with a proposal to send 20% of their funds down to an IMC in the Global South. And others have taken up that call and said, that sounds like a great idea. Let's move some of the money that we have that's easier for those who have more resources to share it. And that's just the tip of the iceberg for what we can possibly accomplish. And I think this kind of model, because we're seeing ourselves more as a network society in a lot of different ways, either within our own region or within internationally and intercontinental, that we have to be supporting those who are in need. So it's like I've actually been writing this sort of proposal about a Global South Fund and was talking to Thatcher the other night when we were brainstorming about what would the criteria be and how do you even define Global South? And then I was thinking, you know, in our own country, the First Nations in Canada or the, you know, Indian country within the U.S., I mean, you could define those spaces as being in as great of need as other places in the South. So I think that's a good recognition for us to just be aware of those needs. And I guess I should just stop now.
No, that's terrific. In fact, I was going to bring up this grant proposal that you had been working on for that very reason.
Yeah, it's going to be a good model, I think, and it will just be another sort of model for us to, you know, can continue to improve upon. And I want to say something, and then I will stop speaking and say goodbye. But I think there is in our movement sometimes a really, and it's not just indie media, but because I work so much in indie media, I see it. And there's a kind of prevalence and an ease with which we critique. And we criticize each other as individuals or ideas or projects rather than thinking in terms of solutions and a more like seeing what works and then what doesn't work and moving in those directions of throwing out what's bad and keeping what's good. And there's something that Bell Hooks wrote that was in the chapter called Feminist Revolution, and it's a little bit of a tangent, but I'll just quote this. A deeply political knowledge of the world does not lead to creation of an enemy. Indeed, to create monsters unexplained by circumstances is to forget the political vision, which above all explains behaviors emanating from circumstance. A vision which believes in a capacity born to all human beings for creation, joys, and kindness, and a human nature which under the right circumstances can bloom. And I guess that some of this powerful creativity and this amazing ingenuity that out of, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, you know, that what we have accomplished with small bits of money and tremendous love and passion, going back to the IMC Boston mission statement, passionate telling the truth, is really phenomenal. And I think that that's something that has to be looked at in terms of indie media as a model and as a role, and I guess for us to just, within indie media, to remember more about how to focus on the creation of things and the positive with the critique and solutions. Because I think that will only enable us to reach more of our potential as individuals and as a collective.
And that would certainly be a radical notion.
Yeah, I think that's also could be called radical. Yeah. Forget.
Sherry, thank you so much for joining us, and certainly for all the work that you do. For people listening in who don't know a lot about indie media, Sherry is really a driving force, and we're way fortunate as a network to have someone like her.
Thank you. Well, thank you, and I thank you for just, I really am inspired by that you're doing this radio show. I think that we should do them more often. Jeff Perlstein, who was one of the people who in Seattle at the beginning and now in Media Alliance in San Francisco, and I were talking the other day, and he said, gosh, you know, we need to be documenting the ongoing evolution of indie media and hearing from people. I'm sure that if you interviewed people and, you know, just different groups and different individuals every week, you would be piecing together even more of the amazing work that goes into this. So I commend you for taking the time and making this happen. I think it's really critical.
Yeah, it's been, just in the break a moment ago, Jay and I were talking about how great it's been just to sit here and talk and listen to one another, and we are all attached to our email and the internet, but we forget that how easy a conference call can be and what a voice-to-voice communication can do for bringing people together.
Conference call, thank you.
Yeah.
Make it happen. Okay, everyone, good luck with the rest of the show, and I look forward to hearing that which I'm not participating in later on some internet radio station or radio station near me.
Yes, you can hear it this afternoon at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Kill Radio, www.killradio.org. In fact, we're about to have Chris Burnett join us, and Chris was, I guess, the founder of Kill Radio. And then we'll also have it posted on the IMCLA site, and I will go ahead and post it on radio as well.
Yeah, that's awesome, and I look forward to hearing more of what Chris might have to say about the network and decentralized networks and all of that good stuff. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Sherry.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.